Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only.
Devour the Podcast.
The boogeyman is real. It's real. And you found him.
He'll tear your soul apart.
What is an excellent day for an exorcism?
Red Rum! Red Rum!
As you check with children.
I'll kill you all.
I'm crazy. Kill you all.
I want to hear you scream.
I guess everyone's entitled to a good scare.
Don't you blame the movies! The movies! Movies don't create psychos! Psychos! Movies make psychos! More creators!
Devour the Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to Devour the Podcast, episode 79. I'm your host David, along with me is Jamie.
Yes, I am here and I am ready for this one.
And along with this, Bo.
And I like ivory dildos.
That you never really get to use.
Right.
You see some blood. You know that thing was getting some action.
It's just like, no time for ceremony.
Well, in the sort of, hallucination. But we'll get to that.
So how's everybody doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well.
Good. Bo?
As we discussed before the show, been in kind of a scramble after a hard drive crash, right. And it is both frustrating and sort of like the dawning of a new day.
Right.
It's like clean drive, plus SSD and super fast.
Yeah.
It does shit. Like when I think about it, great. And I up the RAM like. All right, so as I've said before, I spend way too much money on my computer.
Right.
But right now, this thing is rocking, in addition to all the various storage devices I have, a 500 gig SSD and 24 gig RAM.
Holy shit.
Right?
I love it when you talk about RAM.
Shit, this thing is a beast. Anyway. I lost a little data, but nothing important. Like I kind of cloud store everything significant. So, the one thing I lost though is my, my list of shit I watched this year. So I got to try to recover all that. It's still worth it. Yeah. Even if I'm set back a little bit, I don't care.
Mm.
This thing is like, when you boot this thing up, it boots up before you turn it off. It's great. So, computer nerd stuff. Yay!
All right.
And you, David?
I'm good. I also had to do some computer wonkery because new Bluetooth mouse wasn't playing nice with the laptop. So, overly complicated nonsense that basically equated to a reset and then reinstalling all kinds of shit. So, that's always a pain in the ass. But it works now. So, yay, Bluetooth mouse.
Yeah. I like the wireless mouse and keyboard myself. I haven't done Bluetooth. But at the same time, I'm using a desktop, so I've got the, receiver deal and all that stuff. And, it works great. Like I'm totally wireless from my PC. I also use it for like my total entertainment center.
Right.
So, I kind of need to be.
Well, the Bluetooth mouse was just, it was the biggest mouse that we sell, and it was replacing the much smaller USB wireless mouse I have, which was making my hand cramp up. So
that's because you're a giant.
Yes, I know that. That's the point.
If you've never tried it, I'm a big fan. In fact, I have two of these in case one dies. Mm. But the trackball where the ball itself is positioned.
Yeah, those are weird.
It's the only way I can fly, man. That is where I live.
Rolling around your ball.
Rolling the ball around,
like a hamster.
On my piss house.
So what'd you guys watch?
Ooh, I watched Once Bitten because it's on Netflix now.
Yeah, it is.
Super excited. So I watched that and I was thinking, man, that's on Netflix. We should do that movie. I watched.
Can we not?
You don't like Once Bitten?
No, I don't like Once Bitten.
Really? Aw,
it's no love at first bite.
Well, I watched that recently too. I totally did. I fucking love that movie, but, that's me. I was having a conversation with Graham on, and Duncan was in and out, but mostly it was Graham and myself, and we were talking about Gojira. So I watched Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and then I followed that up with Godzilla versus Mothra. And then I watched a little stand-up, watched Once Bitten, and, oh, I watched a little movie that I had never seen before called There's Nothing Out There. Have you guys ever seen that?
No, never heard of it.
It's from like 88. I think it's 88. Could be 89. But I'd never heard of it either. But it's this really interesting little meta movie that a lot of people apparently have been, since Scream came out, a lot of people who had seen this movie were saying, oh, you know, Scream ripped off this movie because it's it being so meta, like before meta really existed, you know, in that terminology. But this, it was mainly, whereas Scream, the entire film is very horror film referential. This one is mainly just one guy running around going, oh, no, no, you heard that noise. Don't go outside. There's something out there, you know, and then they're like, oh, there's nothing out there. And hence the title. So that was pretty interesting. I had to dig that up on YouTube to watch it. But, I got to check that off my list. And what else? That and I think TV stuff. And that's probably about it.
Okay.
All right. I watched for Gray Shift, obviously, ripping through some Hellraiser movies. Mm-hmm. So I watched Inferno and Hellseeker.
Oh, yeah.
For the two I've Hellraiser films.
They still haven't seen Hellseeker.
They don't. No, I mean, honestly, none of those Hellraiser movies after the second one is worth a shit.
Yeah, I know.
Well, from what I understand, and is this true that the later Hellraiser sequels were written not as Hellraiser films? They were just movies that had been written and they wanted to make them, so they slapped Hellraiser into them.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of made it work. Is that basically what happened there?
That's very apparent in 7 and 8.
Okay.
Well, in all of them, really. You know, I mean, Hellseeker seems to be more clearly a Hellraiser film.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that it has some of the trappings of the Hellraiser movies. More
right,
so
and I know
Christie's like
in that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Inferno, I could at least defend that one, saying that they were trying something a little bit different, and that's sort of what they did in the comics, was stuff that wasn't a traditional, like what you saw in the original first two films, so I accept
right,
Inferno
when,
for what it is.
When Pinhead is in the movie 5 minutes more than I am, then that is not a good Hellraiser film.
Yeah.
Or an excellent me film. I don't know. but it's really... all of those movies are totally skippable. You know? And Inferno, yes, you can make the argument they're doing something different with this. If it weren't so goddamn boring, that would be fine.
Well,
but it is a slog. It is a rough movie to get through for me. So anyway, I watched those. I watched Byzantium.
Oh, yeah.
And that was good, not great, mm-hmm. but certainly worth a look. It's hard not to compare it to something like Kiss of the Damned as a modern vampire film.
Right.
And Kiss of the Damned is just so much better. But it's interesting. It's a good film, and I like Gemma Arterton a lot ever since, what was that? The disappearance of Rachel Creed or Elizabeth Creed, something like that. It was a kind of an indie British film she did that was really, really good. So yeah, watch that. Obviously the films for this week, watched Saint Nick, which is also a Grave Shift film that we'll be doing.
That's the foreign one, right?
Yeah, spoilers, don't watch it.
I think I remember liking that when I did that for a show. Was that not for Devour? Did we not?
No,
do
we
that?
Didn't do that one.
The hell show did I do that for?
Are you thinking of Rare Exports, maybe? I mean, we didn't
do
either. Yeah, you. I mean, we haven't done St. Nick or Rare Exports, but those are the two like recent Santa Claus foreign horror films.
I know it's St. Nick, and that one, it involves like a rooftop scene, right?
Yeah, and like undergrad level computer work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember really liking that. I can't remember what I watched it for, though. But
yeah, I thought the dubbing was terrible, and there was nobody to really like in the movie, and it thought it was a lot more funny and clever than it really was. Or again, totally my perspective, of course, but that was one that by the end of it, I was just like, fine, I get it. Just let this. And then the only other thing worth noting is Sleepy Hollow, which had its sort of, I guess, mid-season finale-ish. You know, all the shows are kind of taking a break until January, February. And man, that show, I just continue to love it.
Rick Mears was in this episode, this latest episode. He played the goalie.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. And, you know, I mean, it's stomping around. It doesn't require a great deal of talent. You just have to be kind of big.
No, yeah. And he fits that bill.
Sure, sure. Although there was a line where he is Ichabod Crane's character is presented with the gift of a Christmas stocking, with his name on it, and the line he responded with was, "You embroidered my name on oversized hosiery. How odd!" And
I cracked that up.
Yeah, it is precisely why I love that show. That, you know, despite how kind of somber the episode was, and you know, dealing so explicitly with the idea of what the relationships between fathers and sons and that kind of thing. It was really well written. It was a well done episode. But then, you know, in the last 5 minutes, it takes a turn where you get a great line like that. And then all of a sudden this revelation right on the heels of it, of like, oh, here's how we're going to spend the whole second half of the season. And man, that show just it has the moves down. It just knows what the hell it's doing. Mm-hmm. So I really
enjoyed the Four Who Speak as One, that whole sequence with those witches. Cool. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I really dig that show. And the main reason for me is his little lines like that. And every time he makes discoveries about, you know, new things in the world, it never ceases to amaze me. And in the midst of all this crap, like the end of the world and all of this, he still is bemused by the least little thing. And it's so clever. And the actor does an amazing job. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's his name? Tom Meissen?
Tom Meissen. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And yeah, he really is quite good in it. I mean, that's a guy who has some chops. He's not just a pretty face. Although, man, that beard. Holy shit, what I would get for that beard. can't grow any facial hair at all. Or at least none that doesn't make it look like, you know, I'm in late stage chemotherapy. So, I really appreciate a good facial hair arrangement, and that guy's got it going on for days.
Oh, that reminds me of something else I watched. And look, sure, we only got to you. We didn't get three segments ahead, so that's I'm better.
Yeah.
But right. I watched for Duncan and Graham. I watched Dog Soldiers because I got to do that with for their 10th episode. They're still in the midst of they're smack in the middle of their Best of British Horror. So we got to do Dog Soldiers, and they introduced me to a movie I'd never seen, which was Night of the Demon with Dana Andrews from 1957. I'm really ashamed. I've never seen that movie. One, I love Dana Andrews. He's one of my favorite leading men, but that movie that is awesome. Has you guys ever seen that?
Yeah, is this, I may be confusing it with Curse of the Demon.
It's the same movie.
It's the same thing. It's the
oh, okay.
Curse,
yeah.
Curse of the Demon was the American release. Night of the Demon was the British release.
Okay, but I've seen it as Curse of the Demon. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that movie. And one thing I took away from that, though, was that if Sam Raimi did not have that movie in mind when he was making Drag Me to Hell, then I'm a monkey's uncle. Because there are just so many elements there in a good way, not in a bad way, because, you know, I love Drag Me to Hell. But yeah, I really dig that. So anybody who hasn't checked that out, for God's sake, do it. it's so good.
Yeah, it a really good, like, classic horror film that served as the foundation for a lot of movies that came after. I mean, Drag Me to Hell, certainly, but there's plenty of influence when you're watching that movie. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I recall watching it and thinking, wow, this is, you know, this movie has been ripped off to the point where it should be sitting on cinder blocks.
Nice. I like that. Roll them up.
Right.
Yeah, so now that I'm officially done now, that's it. I have nothing else to bring.
For now.
David?
Yeah. Well, actually was sick last Friday. So there's, you know, never a good day to wake up, get in the shower, and then vomit. So.
Oh.
Yeah. So I stayed home last Friday.
At least you were in the shower.
Yeah. So I ended up watching Escape from Tomorrow, which was a movie I saw.
Yeah.
That's a good one, huh? I respect what they did, but man, was that movie not very good. Like, this.
It's a little bizarre.
The story's not great. Like, the writing's really not great. Like, there were a lot of things that bothered me about it. It's like, hey, let's make the wife a shrew because that's original. And let's do this other dumb shit that makes no real sense because, and let's disappear up our own ass about halfway through the movie because we can. And it just dumb imagery or dumb like symbolism that was super obvious. It's like, yes, I get it.
Siemens robot segment. Yeah. I maintain that when they made that movie, because that's the one that was shot without permission.
Right.
On Disneyland and Disney World. And then, of course, they blend it together and want you to believe the entire thing is Disneyland, but there are clearly parts that are not, or Disney World, in it one way or the other.
Right.
But I maintain that they shot what they could and then attempted to piece together a story from what they had.
Yeah.
That's just feels about that way. How it seems to me.
I mean, there was the one sequence at the very beginning where the guy gets decapitated on Big Thunder Mountain. Like, that was cool, because that's actually something I'm, like, legitimately, like, paranoid about, and why I won't ride that ride, because I'm legitimately paranoid I'm going to get decapitated. And, like, the line that one woman has towards the end where she's talking about how, you know, you don't realize how many people, how much awful stuff actually happens in the park. It's like, actually, yeah, I do. I've read both books. I've read both Mouse Tales books, so I know people have died in the park from not natural causes. So, no shock to me there. So that was... meh.
That reminds me of, like, there was a kid that got decapitated at Six Flags here a couple years ago, I think. But it was totally his fault. Moron. The little moron had dropped his hat during the ride. So he attempted to retrieve it, which he then no longer needed. But he went over a couple of fences, past some
A
bunch of signs saying, hey, don't go here. And then, you know, he got it, and then he stood up, and the ride came through right at that point, yeah. And then just took his head right off. And I'm like, well, duh.
I remember reading about that one.
That's why they tell you not to do that.
Right. So I watched that. I watched Wicker Man for Podcast Under the Stairs, which was always good. Watched The Conjuring, which also was a movie I saw.
Yeah, oh. Yeah.
Not awful, just... I kind of saw where it was going from the beginning, and it's like, all right, it certainly, James Wan definitely has a hard on for old school ghost movies, and that's fine. It was okay. It was good for when I was watching it, and then by like Tuesday, I was like, wait, did I watch The Conjuring?
Yeah, that's kind of how I was with it, where while I was watching, I was like, oh, there are some good scares, especially in the first half of it, excepting all the doll stuff, which I thought was stupid. And then
the doll stuff was kind of dopey.
Yeah, and by the time you get to the end of it, where they've got the sack over Lily Taylor's head, I was just like, come on, give me just a little bit of a break. But you know, at the same time, I've said it before about this movie in particular. If this is what does it for you, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong for being scared by a movie, because that's such a subjective thing for beginsies. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't work for me because I've seen a ton of these movies and I'm kind of, I'm just tired of that style of film.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a horror film that does something a little different than it. And it's done well, you know, movie is done. I just am a bit fed up with that style. They're like the sinister slash insidious slash conjuring kind of, you know, very slick kind of haunted house stuff. And
funny that you mentioned Sinister, because I also watched most of Sinister. I didn't finish it because I don't remember why I didn't finish it, but I watched most of it. And I was like, this is an okay movie, except that your monster's name is Bagul, which is dumb for beginsies. And he looks like the guitarist from Slipknot, which is also not scary. Way to go.
I actually like that movie.
Yeah, I like that more than The Conjuring, actually. I think the big flaw with that film is that you have an investigative crime writer that is kind of stupid. You know, like when you get to the kind of twist in that movie, it's like, yeah, but when you get there, it's like, well, of course.
Yeah.
You know, we all saw this coming. Yeah. And there are, you know, as yet undiscovered tribes in the Congo that knew he was going to wrap up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was fine. Those were like my two major gripes about the movie. Otherwise, I was like, oh, this isn't bad. You know, it's another case of good performances in a not so great movie, which is kind of how I feel about The Conjuring. Like, yeah, it was all good performances in a kind of movie. So,
yeah.
And I also watched, I'd say about half of Dangerous Days, the making of Blade Runner, which is fascinating.
Ooh.
I have not finished it yet, but I'd gotten to the point where they were actually filming finally, and Harrison Ford was being crabby.
I would like to watch that. I love Blade Runner.
Yeah, I bought the 4-disc set, which has I bought it a while ago, but it's got the 2007 final cut, the documentary on 1 disc, and then 3 archival versions of the film. So the U.S. theatrical cut, the international cut, and the 92 director's cut, which is the one I own previously, which I really like, and then a disc of archive stuff.
I'm not so much with the director's cut on that one.
That's the one I saw originally, so that's kind of the one I love.
Now, I wonder if it's in the briefcase set, like if the documentary is in that one, because I actually bought that.
Yeah, for
Patrick, but I never dug into it myself.
As far as I know, the briefcase version is like one extra disc of versus what I have.
Okay, cool. And then it might still be around here somewhere. Then I don't know if then I might be able to get the opportunity to watch it.
So that's interesting. That's pretty much all I've watched, I think. Yeah. I can't think of anything else I was watching. So
give it time. Sometimes they sneak up on you.
Yeah, that's true. But sure, I actually kept notes this time. So all right. So American Horror Story, which we skipped last week because I hadn't watched it. And holy shit. Some shit went down.
I know, right? See, that's what Bo and I were trying so hard to bite our tongue.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those where it's like, I really want to talk about, you know, the you know, this whole ceremony and the return of Dennis Lehane and Jessica Lange being awesome as usual and, you know, all that stuff. But it's that's a really solid episode.
Mm.
You know what I have found is that in the parts when she starts to, and it's happened a couple of episodes where she starts to appear to weaken,
mm-hmm.
you know, like she's giving over, she's done. And that really breaks my heart. I don't like seeing her character like that. And then when she comes back strong, then I'm like, yeah, bitch, get him, you know, because I love her. I mean, she has done some really nasty, evil shit, but I love her.
Yeah.
And I don't like it when she's not when she's not strong, mm-hmm. you know, when she's not nasty and evil. Like, I want her to be her. I want her to go, if she has to go down, I want her to go down like that. And so it really almost, it really broke my heart when she had taken the pills and she'd like gotten all ready and she's like, that's it. I'm going out, you know? And I was like, no, you're not. You're not going anywhere. But then I was like, please don't. Please don't go. And because I didn't like it. You know, that's not who her character is. I don't want her to be like that. I want her to be badass.
And she right. Yeah, and you know, another thing I really, really like about that episode in particular is I like seeing the Queenie character kind of wavering as to where her allegiance is. I'm not, like, that character has been one of the least interesting to me throughout the show. I mean, she's fine, but of the rest of the cast, she's kind of lower tier for me.
Right.
And I think that character has become much more interesting as she vacillates between allegiance to the coven and also seeing what Marie Laveau is capable of and her, you know, some strange friendship between her and Kathy Bates. So yeah, I really like where that character is going. And I like the fact too, that like the whole conversation between Sarah Paulson and Jessica Lange after the attempted murder is classic American Horror Story. You know, it's that, the conversation of, you know, well, if I'd known how that this was the way to get your respect, I would have tried to kill you years ago, and that kind of stuff. You know, that's all the stuff I want to see from this show, where it's characters being kind of catty with one another, and also plenty of Lily Rabe in this one, so that's never a bad thing either.
Yep. And new episode tonight, so for anybody who's listening to this thinking we were going to do two episodes, it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. But this is also their kind of season ender or mid-season ender. And I think they're gone until February?
No, I don't want to say. Maybe.
So, yeah, it's supposed to be a barn burner.
Awesome. Well, and for anybody who hasn't noticed, season 2 is now available on Netflix streaming, so.
Yeah, that's right. So dig into that if you haven't seen Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Totally worth it.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, so that's pretty much it for pre-show stuff. So, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, usual, hey, book 2 of Lazarus and the Wife Who Came Back is out. Go buy that.
Shameless plug.
Sure.
Deserved.
Yeah.
I am proud to be shameless in this scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad. And you and I are going to be, and some other people are going to be recording Ginger Snapped.
Yes.
This weekend, which is the Christmas episode of Liking It. So,
yes, indeed.
Be coming out. I'm looking forward to that.
This could be incredibly fun. So, all right. We'll be right back with the news.
David Richardson, owner of Richardson Studio, is a postmodern surrealistic sculptor hailing from Colorado whose work has been in Gothic Beauty magazine, Amazing Figure Modeler magazine, and at many art exhibits across the U.S. and abroad. His works have even been recognized by the great Guillermo del Toro. He's currently collaborating with Clive Barker in a few sculpture projects, including a limited edition aluminum cast wall hanger based on Clive's 1997 sketch V for Vice Versa, which was published within his A to Z of Horror book. Just released for Halloween was a pewter skull medallion that tributes Clive's Sumi sketch and also comes in a limited edition bronze casting. They can be purchased at the official Clive Barker store. Please check out more of David's sculptures and jewelry at DaveRichardsonArt.com and follow him on Twitter at SculptorDave.
Good evening.
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny.
Civil defense officials in Cumberland have told newsmen that murder victims show evidence of having been
partially devoured.
Hey, sure, I'll do it for $50.
Beware the moon, David.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Holy shit! She's a friend of mine!
Okay, and we are back with the news. First up, Magnet reveals release plans for Ty West's The Sacrament. And I gotta tell you, I am ready for some new Ty West after those crappy short films that he gave us most recently in ABCs of Death and VHS. I have come to the conclusion that he is just not a short film maker.
No.
That is not what he does. So I am anxious to see something else full feature from him. So, eager to see Ty West The Sacrament? Why, yes, I am. Well, we've received word that Magnet Releasing intends to bring the film to VOD on May 1st, 2014, ahead of a limited theatrical run on June 6th, 2014. Now, here's an aside. When a film does a limited theatrical release, do you think it hurts the film to release it on VOD beforehand?
Not necessarily.
Or do you think it really makes a difference? Okay. I was just curious what you guys thought.
Yeah, because limited release means it's only going to be in, you know, what, 10, 12 cities?
Yeah.
And VOD means anybody with a computer or Xbox or whatever can watch
it. Right, well, that's what I mean. It's like, do you, if it's on VOD, you know, then am I going to make the hour and a half trek to Atlanta to see it? You know, when...
No.
You know, but I might have if it weren't available otherwise. So...
Right, but why go for a, hey, I might make that 3-hour round trip instead of, oh, holy shit, I can watch it 2 minutes from now and pay $4 to do so. And either way, you know, most of the money that you're getting even off of VOD is a more direct channel to the film itself, because you're not paying for all the, you know, the theater licensing and stuff like that. So,
I still think if I were doing
it works
a
out to be profitable.
I guess. Well, I'm sure it does, but I still think if I were doing a limited theatrical release, I think I would do a VOD release either in tandem or even afterward, so that you would at least get some of those theater dollars. You know, and I actually would be tempted to then go see it in the theater because, hey, I like going to see movies in the theater. But if I know that it's ready like a month ahead of time, then, you know, why wait a month to go see it when I could – and then drive – when I could not. So, you know.
Yeah.
All right. The film has spent the last few months enjoying a festival run where it has been attracting some very good reviews. Joe Swanberg, AJ Bowen, Amy Simetz, Caitlin Shile, Kentucker Audley, which is a really interesting name, and Gene Jones star. And here's your synopsis. Two Vice Media correspondents set out to document their friend's search to find his missing sister. They travel outside of the United States to an undisclosed location where they are welcomed into the world of Eden Parish, a self-sustained rural utopia comprised of nearly 200 members. At the center of this small religious socialist community is a mysterious leader known only as Father. As their friend reunites with his sister, it becomes apparent to the newcomers that this paradise may not be as it seems. Well, who saw that coming? What started as just another documentary shoot soon becomes a race to escape with their lives. Thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I'm all about it. I can't wait. I'm a big Ty West fan, as you know, and this sounds really interesting. And I agree. I think his short films have been... you know, middling to poor. That guy has given me enough pleasure between Innkeepers and House of the Devil. Yeah, that's a movie I can watch just about any time.
And that is still my favorite review that you have ever written.
Oh, well, thank you.
I love it. Love it. Is it still up on Last Blog?
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, if anyone has not read that review, that Bo's House of the Devil review on Last Blog, I recommend it because it is a hoot.
And it is a hoot, nanny.
It gets you right here. It really does. And I'm pointing to my heart because I every time I read that, I feel right there. I'm right there with you. But I too am looking forward to that very, very much. I love Ty West and I love his style. And what we found is that it just doesn't seem to work in a short film. And it makes sense. Short films and feature films are completely different animals. And he tends to need the burn. You know, I think he needs the time to stretch out and give us his story. And short films just don't allow him to do that. So I'm ready for this.
Sure.
Okay, next up, Kevin Smith's horror movie Tusk gets distribution. He missed the Sundance deadline and is still in post-production, but Kevin Smith has found a distributor for his upcoming horror film. The Wrap reports A24 and Demarest Films are releasing the film in fall 2014. The former handled the distribution for this year's Spring Breakers and The Bling Ring. Smith wrapped shooting on Tusk recently. He plans to show off a trailer at the Sundance Film Festival next month. Tusk, and this is just crazy pants. This whole thing is just nuts. But Tusk finds Justin Long playing a podcaster who interviews an old reclusive seafarer, played by Michael Parks, who has sinister plans for his interviewer, Genesis Rodriguez and Haley Joel Osment. I guess we're also in it. The idea for the film was hatched on Smith's Smodcast. And do you guys know what the deal is about this? I mean, I don't.
Oh yeah, I've been following this one pretty closely.
That is just nuts. Like, I mean, I don't know. If someone offered you the opportunity to dress up like a walrus and do walrus,
yeah, and it's the guys who do the practical effects for Walking Dead are doing the Walrus Man outfit,
right?
Oh. Wow.
No, it sounds really insane. But again, this is not a film I have seen before, and that already makes it really interesting to me.
This is a film no one has seen before. And I think what's interesting about this, too, is that when Kevin Smith was, you know, originally coming up with this concept, he didn't even realize it was a horror film. Like, he didn't intend, that was not, he didn't set out to make a horror film. It was just that as it was coming together, he was like, oh. You know, I mean, I think that's pretty interesting. I'm curious.
Yeah. I'll watch it, but I don't have much hope after Red State.
See, I loved Red State.
I like Red State. Yeah.
Red State was good until the ending, which was fucking stupid.
I thought the ending was...
No, see, the ending was dumb. And then when you watch Kevin Smith Goes to Hell, he explains what the original ending was, which would have been amazing. And then it makes me even more angry.
That was funding, right? I mean, didn't he just not funding, have the money to do? Okay.
Well, and also, I think the fact that it kind of subverts your expectation of where that movie is going. Again, if a movie can throw me off my game, mm-hmm. I respect it a little bit. And even though I don't think it's terribly a terribly satisfying ending, it was at least an interesting ending.
Yeah.
I dug it.
I also don't particularly like Kevin Smith anymore. He's just kind of a big dumb pothead.
Oh, God bless him.
I know. Okay, you know what? I have the World War Z news after all.
Oh, all right. Well then.
The World War Z sequel is on the move. A director has been found.
Oh, fuck.
The little film that could, World War Z, faced an uphill battle getting the screen, spending millions, experiencing rewrites and multiple endings. But guess what? It made a ton of money, and now Paramount wants a sequel. We've known one was in the works, and today Paramount Pictures has hired The Impossible and The Orphanage helmer Juan Antonio Bayona to direct the sequel. And that's according to The Hollywood Reporter. Brad Pitt will again star and produce the sequel to this summer's release, which earned an impressive $540 million worldwide. The film, which was directed by Mark Forster and based on the novel, not really, by Max Brooks, took in $202.4 million domestically and $337.6 million overseas. The trade adds that no writers are attached at this stage and there has been no release date set. But that's a truckload of money.
Yep.
How about that? And, you know, I actually found that film to be enjoyable. Even though it was vastly different from the novel, I still haven't watched it yet.
I
wouldn't even call it based on the novel.
Kind of
really wouldn't
dreading watching it.
But I thought it was enjoyable. It got a little too Resident Evil-y at the end for me. But it was, you know.
I did see the South Park parody, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Which also, the wrap-up of the Black Friday saga was pretty amazing, too.
Yes, yes. That was really, really good. I thought World War Z was okay. I really don't like the ending of that movie in a number of ways. I don't like the fact that, you know, we have to pause to have a Pepsi in that fucking movie.
Right.
And I also, you know, I've said it before, I don't like the way that movie retracts, where it's like big, 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 and then the last half hour is like the first Resident Evil film.
Right. That's exactly dead on.
All that aside, the guy who is directing the sequel, if you haven't seen it, I really, really recommend The Impossible. I thought that was a fantastic movie. So,
what was the other one? Oh, The Orphanage, which I loved The Orphanage.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, that guy's two for two. And if you're going to get somebody to do a sequel to a movie that I was pretty lukewarm about, then this is the guy.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
Fair enough.
Okay. We're here. This is the last story.
Hurrah!
And it is Bloodline comes to DVD in January. Osiris Entertainment releases Bloodline on DVD January 7th, 2014. The film stars Matt Thompson, Jesse Christopherson, Kimberly Alexander, Gina Comparato, Christopher Frontero, and Hell on Wheels' Granger Hines. Matt Thompson directs, as well as being in it. Your synopsis is such. Seminary student Brett Ethos falls away from the church and his faith, only to find out that his bloodline is sought after by a real evil. On a trip with friends and an old flame, he goes to explore a cabin left to him by the will of his family. There he discovers his true heritage. Temptation or redemption becomes his ultimatum. His friends' lives and his own hang in the balance. All right? I always enjoy seeing...
That's a synopsis of a movie.
Yeah, it is. I enjoy seeing people lose their faith. So, you know, who knows? Could be good. Oh, that reminds me. I swear I didn't plan this. But I also watched Cabin in the Woods again.
Fair enough.
Just because. And God damn, I love that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit. I forgot. I watched about half of Evil Dead. And turned it off because I'm like, this movie is annoying me now.
Aww.
Yeah, but the point where the girl, the blonde chick who has no real bearing on the story except that she's there to die, cuts her hand off, I'm just like, yeah, fuck you, Evil Dead. Sorry. Get out
of
my face.
Man, that's one of my favorite parts.
The movie's dumb.
You're dumb.
I'm sorry. It was dumb. That movie is a dumb, dumb movie.
Dumb, 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 dumb.
Yeah, pretty much.
I like it.
I know. I seem to be the dissenting voice who's actually pointing out that the fucking script is bad. Like, I get that it was really bloody and that was awesome, and the special effects work is good, but that doesn't change the fact that the story was dog shit for the most part.
Nope. Fooey on you.
Yeah, no.
That's what I say.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a couple of flaws in logic, to be sure.
A couple?
But
the big glaring one being, hey, here's this book that says don't read, don't think, don't say. What does the fucking English teacher do? Oh, I'm going to do a rubbing on this book to see what this says and then read it out loud, despite the book telling me not to.
Yeah, I just...
don't follow the rules.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and I just think that is not the point of that film. You know, there are plenty of movies that I can ignore the silliness of them to enjoy sort of the heart of it. And that's one for me that I think that movie's heart is definitely in the right place.
I'm sorry. Really, after Cabin in the Woods, you kind of... like, that movie sort of made it so that it's like, if you're gonna do dumb shit like that, it's way more obvious. And that's why I didn't like that movie.
Yeah, I get it. I don't agree, no, but I get it.
That's fine. I seem to be the one person who doesn't like that fucking movie, so whatever.
I'm sure you're not the only one.
No.
You're just the only one I know.
Yeah, because everybody else is like, oh, blood, cool.
Well, blood is cool.
I'm not arguing that point. My argument is that the movie was fucking
that's
dumb.
That's true, blood is cool.
Ugh, anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, you know what? That is the news. I am done. Done, 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 done.
Well played. All right, so we will be right back with Lair of the White Worm.
Hey, kids! Do you like horror movies?
Do you like podcasts?
Do you like people called Gil and Roscoe?
If you do, you're going to love
Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast! Every week, you'll join your hosts, Gil and Roscoe, who'll discuss a range of topics, including juice drinks,
alcoholic drinks,
lollipops,
bobby socks,
Robocop,
uncomfortable chairs,
comfortable chairs.
It sounds absolutely nothing like our podcast.
Well, it should be a representation of our podcast, so we should start off with the pure cheesy intro and then just be like, actually, no, that's only way too upbeat for us.
Yeah. We could have some dead classy music in the background and people would think we're really high class gentlemen.
We are high class gentlemen. That's just not what our podcast sounds like.
Right.
So that's Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. Look for us on iTunes, Facebook and Twitter.
It came from the instant queue.
From the director of Altered States and the creator of Dracula comes a new classic thriller with a bite. Ken Russell's The Lair of the White Worm, starring Sammy Davis of Hope and Glory, Catherine Oxenberg from TV's Dynasty, Amanda Donahoe, and Hugh Grant of Maurice. In a remote corner of present-day England, a young archaeologist named Angus Flint unearths a mysterious ancient skull and uncovers a horrifying pagan mysticism. When the skull suddenly disappears, strange things start to happen. And Angus begins to suspect the bizarre and serpentine Lady Sylvia Marsh. Together with his friends Mary and Lord James Dampton, Angus sets out to destroy the horrible white worm and his evil worshippers before they make a living sacrifice of the young Virgin Eve. Peter Travers of People Magazine says, The Lair of the White Worm is a hoot of a horror film. Variety calls it an original, fun-filled nightmare. And Stuart Klein of Fox Channel 5 says, it's droll, kinky, fun, see it. Slither into a labyrinth of terror and fun with the master of the bizarre, Ken Russell's The Lair of the White Worm.
Lair of the White Worm. This was released in 1988, and synopsis is, shortly after a Scottish archaeologist digs up a worm-like skull on a country estate, enigmatic recluse Lady Sylvia Marsh, the last disciple of an ancient pagan religion, steals the artifact, and soon local residents begin to vanish. This was directed by Ken Russell, and written by Ken Russell, based on the novel by Bram Stoker, and I assume it's very loosely based on the novel.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's... I don't recall if I've ever read it. I don't think I have, and... Yeah.
So this stars Amanda Donahoe as Lady Sylvia Marsh, Hugh Grant as Lord James Dampton, Catherine Oxenberg as Eve Trent, Peter Capaldi as Angus Flint, Sammy Davis as Mary Trent, Stratford Jones as Peters, Paul Brook as PC Ernie, Imogen Clare as Dorothy Trent, Chris Pitt as Kevin, Gina McGee as Nurse Gladwell, Christopher Gable as Joe Trent, and Lloyd Peters as Jesus Christ.
Superstar.
This movie is fucking silly.
Oh yeah, absolutely it is. It is. This is, like I said,
gibberish.
I pair this movie well.
A lot. Okay, most of the dialogue in this movie is undecipherable gibberish at times.
To you, sir.
I don't know that I would agree with that necessarily. Well, I don't think it's. I don't think that this is a movie that is leaning heavily on the snappy dialogue.
No, not at all.
You know,
don't Don't give a damn.
Although I think the performances are surprisingly good in this movie.
Yeah.
I really like Amanda Donahoe in it. I think Hugh Grant is, like, you can certainly see why he became, you know, the foppish romantic lead that he became. Mm-hmm. It's really fun seeing Peter Capaldi at a incredibly young age,
right,
in this film. And I had totally forgotten he was in it, in fact. And when I saw his name pop up, I was like, son of a bitch. All right, well, the new Doctor is in Lair of the White Worm. I think that this is a movie, if you've watched any of Ken Russell's films, he is trying to get to a place of visual weirdness. And that's what I like about this movie. It is insane. It takes there are so many images that have stuck with me. And in fairness, I saw this movie for the first time when I was about 12.
Right.
So around the same time as seeing something like Rawhead Rex. So these two movies occupy the same cabinet in my brain,
mm-hmm,
of these weirdly sacrilegious films that are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there is no reason they should be playing Snakes and Ladders. And then, I like the whole conversation.
And the overdramatic scene where she starts crying and she's just waiting for him to take her hand so she could cry on his shoulder. I was like, this, okay, so aside from the first 5 minutes of being dialogue that I comprehended what they were saying. And here's the thing, I understood the storyline of this movie and what was happening, but every time somebody finished talking, I was kind of confused as to what the fuck had just happened, because it just seems like gibberish. And there's
oh, me spotted dick.
Yeah, there's bits where it's just like long, these really, like that one shot where like she's waiting for Hugh Grant to take her hand so she can cry on his shoulder is like an awkward moment. And then like the weird dream sequences that I'm sure looked great in 1988. Man, do those special effects not hold up. A lot of the special effects in this movie don't hold up, but they're kind of charming. And it's just, it's so fucking weird. And like, yeah, the butler is bizarre for no apparent reason.
When you got that sheriff with the eyes,
with the crazy eyes,
it's trying to escape his face.
Yeah,
and it's great because like at the end when he gets red eyes, it's just like, oh man, they red eyed up the crazy eye.
And Peter Capaldi plays bagpipes at one point in a kilt.
Oh, and he's hiding in there somewhere. He's got that mongoose somewhere in his kilt. Where the fuck was that mongoose beforehand? That's all I want to know.
This movie is crazy pants.
The fact that, like, when the, you know, Eagle Scout, or the British equivalent thereof, is playing the harmonica and Amanda Donahue goes into the crazy snake dance and then is like, give me that. Like, and then it's paid off not once, but two more times where she does crazy snake dances.
Yeah.
Or someone does.
When they rig up speakers and play the snake charming music, she dances out the door, like all the way across the foyer.
God.
The door. It's classic.
And that's the kind of shit about this movie that I absolutely love. I love how ridiculous it is and how outrageous it is. And it's almost like Ken Russell got handed a horror script that was more like vampiric in nature, you know, with all the like the snake bites and people becoming snake monsters and all that shit. And he was like, okay, I like where this is now, but follow me. What if we had the snake wrapped around Jesus and a bunch of nuns getting raped in front of him? And wait, there's more. Every time somebody plays music, somebody does a sexy dance. And somebody agreed to let him do that.
And, you know, it has admittedly been a very long time since I've seen this movie. I was probably in my teens the last time I watched it. And I'd only seen it a couple of times before now. I remembered it being much sexier than it is in my grown-up years. You know, like, as a teenager, I remember just being like, wow, like, this is really, like, over the line. Like, this is just, like, really hot, you know. And now I'm watching it going, that's not so much hot. It's kind of goofy. But, I mean, that one outfit that she's wearing with the thigh-high boots and, you know, the, like, the PVC outfit that she's wearing, that's pretty sexy. But there are so many things now that what translated to me as sexy back then just translate as corny now.
Yeah.
You know, mainly being the sexy dancing. And I was giggling. I was just like,
sexy
oh,
tunes.
But then we've got that great, in the beginning, we get this, the White Worm Festival thing. And because there's this, on this land, on this property, there's this folklore about this white worm.
Right.
That was
Hugh Grant's,
by Hugh Grant's
ancestor. Killed
ancestor.
It.
And so they have this yearly festival thing. And you've got this great song that gets stuck in my head. And it came right back to me watching it this time. Even though it had been that long since I've seen it, this song came right back to me and got stuck in my head once again. I'm crazy about that. I love that damn song. But it's this weird, like, I don't know, like rural rock Irish folk band. I don't know what it is, but it's awesome.
And let's not forget, in the middle of this movie, Hugh Grant has some kind of fever dream with Indian wrestling stewardesses and then positions a pin like an erection.
Yes.
And I don't care
I did forget
who you
about
are.
That.
If you don't find that to be just a wonderfully strange turn of events to be happening in a movie where it doesn't belong, then, and maybe that's the Rawhead Rex connection for me, is there shit in this movie that doesn't feel like it belongs in this movie, and yet it's there. And I, you know, again, I kind of love this movie for being as weird and ridiculous and audacious. And yeah, the sexuality isn't as hyper sexual as maybe you remember from childhood or whatever.
Well, I mean,
but
I just remember
very...
this was like a big jerk off movie for guys my age at the time, you know. It was like a big deal. And now I'm just watching it going, did they really? I don't know. Did it work for you this time?
Did I jerk off watching it? No. Yeah. I mean,
that
could
little,
I have? Sure.
That was a little private. I'm sorry.
No. I'm an open book, ma'am. No, but at the same time, there is such a recurring thread of sexuality. I mean, you know, Ken Russell is obviously like, okay, well, this is a giant snake. Snakes are like dicks. How about everything is about dicks in this movie? And so you've got, you know, like... To soil the virginal sacrifice, even though it doesn't go down this way, but Amanda Donahoe is prepared to sidle up to the virgin and just rip her half in two with a big ivory dildo to prepare her for the snake god. And
which
I don't know of another
you,
movie.
She displays probably on her mantle.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you actually see that it has gotten some use in the past. You know, when you get the flashback where you see a bunch of bloody nuns. And anyway, I think that, in addition to all that stuff, there's also the just like how like disdainful any talk of religion is in this movie. You know, that even the people who are kind of on the side of good in this film aren't terribly religious. And then you've got Amanda Donahoe on the other side, like, yeah, you know what? Fuck Jesus. I said it. And that's kind of her whole character is, you know, people have started worshiping this fake god and, you know, my God was there years before and blah, blah, blah. And you're on my land and all that stuff. And yeah, it's ridiculous and over the top and like this movie, it feels like it was made by a 17-year-old who was a chronic masturbator and an atheist.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I think you nailed it.
And I respect that. So yeah, as ridiculous as the goings on are, I kind of love it. It's just one of those movies I think you kind of need to see at least once just to understand that somewhere out in the world is a director who would do something like this.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. It was surprisingly entertaining for as fucking bizarre as it was.
Yeah. And I think expressly because it's as bizarre as it is.
Yeah. You
know, this is a movie that is, you're not going to, you can easily predict the main beats of this film.
Right.
But the way that it gets to A to C is not by going to B, it goes to H. And then works its way back to C. And that's kind of the charm of it, I think.
Yeah.
It even dabbles a little bit in X.
Yeah. You actually get, do you get Amanda Donahoe Bush in this? I think you kind of do.
Yes. Yeah. Either that or, I mean, you definitely get the frontal. I was looking, like, trying to see if she was having to wear, like, you know, because sometimes they make them wear, like, an apparatus or something. And I was trying to see if you could actually see anything. I believe that's what we were looking at. I believe we were looking at her head on.
Yeah, and probably to this day, this movie is why I like the kind of prim and proper British ladies.
And you got to love a world in which an ancient god, an ancient, like, snake god, can be taken out with a hand grenade.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, probably the biggest failing of this movie for me is that Ken Russell did not seem to give a shit about the main story.
Nope.
You know, and he's just like, he plays with all the other stuff, the real ancillary stuff to this story, and really spends his time on that. But I kind of agree that's the more interesting stuff to me, and I'm good with it. I like the decision to ignore the giant snake god monster as long as possible.
Right.
And instead worry about, like, you know, like you said, like this butler that clearly kind of resents the fact that he's a butler. And doesn't really care for Hugh Grant's character, who, let's face it, is kind of an asshole.
An endearing asshole, though, as Hugh Grant tends to be. You know, even when Hugh Grant is being an asshole, he's endearing. You know, you can't help but love the guy. And he's so jovial about it.
He's very charming, but at the same time, he's also the kind of dick that will let his butler, like, completely disassemble the breakfast in bed and then say, like, you know what, I'm going to have that downstairs.
Yeah.
And his butler's just like, you know what, go fuck yourself, sir. So I like all that stuff. I think the main story is not where this movie is at. It's more about exploring these wild fever dreams that Ken Russell had during the preparation of this film, apparently.
Yeah.
And I think all that stuff is kind of fascinating and fun and hilarious.
All right. So, rating.
Me first?
I don't care who goes first.
All right. I would give this 4 stars. I think this is a wonderfully absurd film.
Okay. Jamie.
Yeah. Of a train.
Oh. All right.
Gross.
Yeah, I know, right? All right. I give it a 3 because it was certainly entertaining despite the frontier gibberish that was a lot of the dialogue. And it really was entertaining. I didn't know what the fuck was going on half the time, but I still came out of it the other side going, wait, I actually know what happened in this movie. All right.
Yeah, I have somehow assembled a plot from the nonsense.
Right.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think that is a perfectly reasonable reaction to this movie. Although I would encourage you to watch it again because you kind of understand how to take this movie on its own terms.
Right.
you know, that you have no expectation of it telling a story in a coherent way. And then it's just like, what? Why the fuck are these chicks wrestling on the plane again? What is this representing? Oh, the pin. Of course. He's got a hard on. So it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I gave it a 4 too. I had such a wonderful time going back to this movie and thinking, wow, this is not at all what I got from it when I was like years and years ago. But I don't think I even really paid that much attention to what was supposed to be happening back then. And now I was kind of focused on, or trying to focus on the story, and realized I still didn't get a whole lot from that, because that's really not the point of this film. But yeah, it's a 4. It's awesome.
Okay. So next week will be Kill List. Up next is Demons.
The podcast which you're about to listen to is an account of the viewing experiences which befell two Scottish men. It is all the more tragic in that they were young and enthusiastic. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to have watched as much of the mad and macabre movies they did. For them, a friendship and shared interest in horror movies became a nightmare. The events of their viewing were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre podcasts in the annals of podcast history. The Podcast Under the Stairs. The Podcast Under the Stairs can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com or on iTunes.
Going soon. Coming soon.
1, 2, 3. Abracadabra.
Silas buried his body in the field and dragged Molly from the house, hanging her in the farm's apple orchard.
Cardio I have to do. It's ridiculous. There's that whole thing. Made it look like you're walking. Everybody else is running their asses off.
Everybody thinks we just wake up one morning and start obsessing about a girl and start stalking her, killing everybody that gets in the way.
That does seem to happen a lot with you guys.
That boy
He's going to be the best yet.
There are 11 exits from the first floor. Another 8 or 9 that might be manageable from second floor. All the obvious weapons are set.
Why are you doing this?
We're not going to have this conversation.
Oh, why? What, you never
get in the van.
You have no idea who you're dealing with.
So how will this play out? How will this work?
You won't like what you see. I promise you that.
Make sure you're getting this. Go!
Oh, start up.
What you got filming those cameras, boys?
I cannot stand here and let this happen.
Don't you get it? We're in this now. We're part of this equation.
We're right where he wants us. All of us. You have to tell me. What happens to me?
Do you like movie reviews that are insightful, thought-provoking, and delivered by somebody who's trained to critically dissect every aspect of a motion picture without ever having to use obscenities?
Then you've got the wrong show. Kruger Nation Horror Podcast is ready to feed your slasher movie and exploitation needs. There'll be more blood, expletives, and titties than you can shake your grandma's beetle flaps at. Visit www.krugernation.com.
Oh, good God! A butthole casserole!
And now our feature presentation.
Demons. This was released in 1985, and synopsis is, a group of people are trapped in a large movie theater in West Berlin that's infected by ravenous demons who proceed to kill and possess the humans one by one, thereby multiplying their numbers. Which, I did not realize this was supposed to be West Berlin until I just read that.
So, I didn't either, well, so don't feel bad.
all the signage and everything is in German.
Was it? I thought it was Italian.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying that close attention to it.
I never paid attention to that.
You know, because like outside the movie theater, it says like Der Movie Theater.
It says Metropolis or something.
Metropole,
right. Which anyway, this movie is silly. This was directed by Lamberto Bava. The original story was written by Dardano Sacchetti. And the script is by Dario Argento, Lamberto Bava, Dardano Sacchetti, and Franco Farini. which explains a lot about this movie. So Urbana Barberini was George, Natasha Hovey is Cheryl, Carl Zinni is Ken, Fiore Argento is Hannah, Paolo Cozzo is Kathy, Fabiola Toledo is Carmen, Nicoletta Elmi is Ingrid the Usherette, Stelio Candeli is Frank, Nicola Tessier is Ruth, Goretta is Rosemary, and Bobby Rhodes is Tony, the greatest character ever. Because holy shit, she's a friend of mine.
I'm going to do my pimp voice.
Oh, God damn it.
Oh, the dubbing is so bad in this movie.
It's awful.
It is. It's really bad.
This movie is really bad in the best possible way. This movie is dumb. Okay, this movie.
It's very simple. I mean, you can't get more simplistic than this. It's not very, it's not cerebral at all. There's nothing to think about. There's nothing to contemplate. It's, you know, one major setting and a bunch of shit going down.
Yeah.
And
then apparently the end of the world somehow, which I've always kind of been confused about, but okay.
I think, the old blind dude.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking as I was watching it, but I was like, wait a minute, seriously? That one motherfucker did all that damage, but I can't hold that against this movie.
All right, so I am a big, big fan of movies in general that have kind of that central location where people are besieged. It's the Night of the Living Dead scenario. And so I dig that. I like the demon transformations in this because they're just gory and outrageous and bizarre.
As the Italians love it. There's a lot of dripping goo and squirting goo and just goo in general.
And it also has a pretty rockin' soundtrack.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's got some old school crew on there and Billy Idol and that kind of stuff. So,
and then the orchestral stuff is Simonetti.
Yeah, I mean, I like the music. And I like the fact that when shit gets real in this movie, all of a sudden there's a hard rock song. And there's something about that attitude that I really respond to. I wish more movies did that these days, you know, going back to what we were talking about with, you know, Sinister and Insidious and The Conjuring and stuff like that. There aren't that many kind of rock and roll horror movies anymore, mm-hmm. where it's just like, we're going to be crazy and gory and silly and stupid. And by the way, here's some Metallica. And I wish more movies kind of embrace that philosophy because it's fun. You know, it's as stupid as heavy metal music is stupid.
Well, that was like when heavy metal and horror went together and it was, it was almost like one, and I actually had a conversation with Duncan and Graham about that, you know, about how here, typically a horror fan will also appreciate metal and vice versa, you know, not all the time, but it tends, especially if it's stuff like from the 80s, it kind of goes together. Not so much over there, pretty much not at all over there, which I find very interesting, but that's something that I greatly miss. And like, there's nothing like tearing through a movie theater on a bike while Fast as a Shark plays in the background and you're beheading demons left and right.
And then the helicopter crashes through the roof for no apparent reason.
Yeah, but that keeps shit moving. Like, this movie, every time it starts to slow down, they introduce some other crazy, like, here are the punks riding around in a car, spilling blow all over their backseat. And that's great.
Oh, don't get me wrong. And for as silly as I think this movie is, it is endlessly entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
Dumb as shit at times and absolutely absurd and is the epitome of, like, this is like the ultimate 80s Italian movie because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense at times. Shit's just happening. There's gooey shit and great special effects that look kind of awful. There's bad dubbing. There's misplaced heavy metal at times that just makes you go, what the fuck? And it's just absurd. Like, there's parts of it just that it makes my head hurt at times to really think about it seriously. But then it's like, but there's a fucking pimp in this movie who is the fucking greatest caricature ever. And I love this movie because of it.
Horrors, I can smell him a mile away. But but the one thing about this movie, though, is that every time I do watch it, what I'm all into the beginning. By the middle, it tends to lose my interest. In that, I mean, I'm still watching it, but I can do other things because it's like more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. And then all of a sudden you get Bike. And then I'm like, fuck, yes, here we go.
Yeah, pretty much until then, like the punks show up at first. And that's kind of, because it does kind of lull when they're like up in the balcony. And you're like, all right, well, you guys are in the balcony now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at that point, it's just. I don't know. It's just like, it's not, I won't say repetitious necessarily, but it just is, you get it.
Yeah. It's you know? Very obvious. This was written by like five people and they were all like, hey, you know, what'd be great right now. This.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then like we get to the end and it's just rock and roll straight through right. And kick ass.
And for some reason, although girl changes into a demon, although the dude had a nasty cut on his arm. Like what?
Yeah, well, I think she got pretty heavily puked on when she was crawling.
I thought that was somebody else.
I think that was her.
See, that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of parts of this movie where I'm not entirely sure who was who because it's dark and there's just goo everywhere. And let's face it, all these attacks kind of look alike.
It was some unfortunate puke, too. By the way, I mean that is an unfortunate situation to be in. Like, you know, you're crawling along, and then all of a sudden, just vomit. I mean, and she's still crawling. So basically, as she's crawling, she's getting vomited on from the neck down.
Yeah.
And then, like, she comes out the end of that to guy hanging from.
Oh yeah.
Guy hanging from the ceiling. I'm like, well, you're having a bad day, sister.
And why was there a blind dude at a movie? Like.
Aw, Jesse, he didn't mean it.
Yeah, Jesse goes to movies all the time.
No, I know, but this dude was like this old fucking dude with his whatever she was, and he's just like,
I think it was his daughter
or something. I think so. And like he's just like yelling out of the entire movie, like, what's happening now? Is she scared? Are you scared?
Like, yes, I am.
Yeah, but as ridiculous as that is, I think it kind of works in the context of this movie
where you have a
guy with a half a Terminator face handing out tickets to this fucking thing.
He doesn't show back up to the end of the movie for no apparent reason.
Right. And it's like, are you the final boss? Because you seem kind of shitty for that.
Yeah.
But all right, whatever. And also, you have like the ticket taker in the elf costume.
Right.
Who seems like real diabolical until like shit goes down and she's like, what's going on?
Right.
It's like, wait a second. You look like you knew a little something about something.
Right.
Yeah, I would but think that every not. Single time. Because she does. She looks very sinister the whole time. Every time you look at her, she's got this look on her face. Like a sinister look. And it's like, oh, she's involved. And then suddenly she's not. And I'm very confused about her character because she threw me off. But
yeah,
when one of
the hoes puts on the demon mask and cuts her face, she kind of has that grin like, mm-hmm, sums up. But then when something is up, she's all, like, I don't understand the writing of that character where they're just like, she's going to be real sinister until we realize that she's nobody. And then we just don't care about her anymore.
I don't think the writers understood the writing of this movie.
Well, that leads me to my question. If the hoe had not put on the mask and cut herself, what would have happened?
Everyone would have had a delightful evening.
Everyone would have sat and watched a shitty Italian horror movie.
That's not a very good sinister plan, then, is it? You have to rely on a curious hooker?
Yeah, this movie is pretty reliant on just shit happening because...
Yeah, although I do like the fact that if the hoe had not been curious, this movie would have been 90 minutes of watching another movie, and then everyone just goes home.
Yeah, pretty much. That's this is like the perfect example of like just bizarre Italian cinema, where you're not entirely sure why something is happening, but it looks cool, and then some other weird shit happens, and you're not entirely sure why that weird shit just happened, but it looked interesting, and then it's over. and you're like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Well, all right. So when the helicopter, not to jump too far ahead, but when the helicopter jumps,
the plot of this movie is very simple.
I wouldn't worry about jumping.
Although I do really like the gag earlier on with the two kids in the ducks, where you see the demon claws clacking. I think that's a good misdirection. So the helicopter comes busting through the ceiling of this place after Claudio and Claudia, I don't know their names, were like on the bike slashing people up with a sword, which was awesome. And then, because there are people like launching from a trampoline over the bike, it's just silly, but it's kind of wonderfully dumb. And so the helicopter comes crashing through, and they're like, well, you know, we got to climb up. And like you said, it's the end of the world outside. And I love the fact that this movie had the ambition to be, all right, we're going to set this whole thing kind of in this theater with a few exceptions when we jump outside to get to these other characters who are then going to show up so we can kill them.
Right.
But the end of this movie is, hey, get in our Jeep. We're headed towards maybe safety. Who knows? And then the main chick of the film, the one you've been following the whole time, demons out, and they just shoot her and leave her on the road, and it happens after the credits start rolling.
Right. Which,
and that seems like it.
And they take a really long time to fucking get to that point where it's like, you know, something's going to happen.
Well, but that's the thing. I don't think you do. And I think that there are legitimately people who could have seen this movie and walked away from it thinking like, oh, well, you know, the couple got away and maybe they're okay. And it's like, no. If you had stayed another 60 seconds, you would have seen that they just shoot her in the gut, leave her in the road. And the dude seems kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, where he's just like, you know, maybe I dodged a bullet here. She was a little clingy.
Well, to be fair, he's the one that grabbed her hand first when they're watching the movie, The Little Wuss.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, oh, I'm scared. I was about to say, I think you do know that something's going to happen, because I always feel compelled to stay, even though the credits are going. But then I've seen it before. So I can't tell you, if someone had never seen this before, I don't know if they would, maybe they would switch it off at that point, and maybe they would miss that part.
Here's the thing.
I don't know.
This is the second time I've seen this. First time I saw it, I did sit there and watch it, because they keep bouncing back and forth, like the credits are rolling, but then they switch back to looking at the characters again. And I knew that the dude had gotten a gnarly cut on his arm, so I'm expecting him to turn into a fucking demon already. And then it turns out it's the chick, which makes no goddamn sense. But I'm like, all right, if you say so, movie. I'm following you this far with the end of the world and all this other crazy nonsense.
Yeah, I think it's disappointing, too, that Demons 2 didn't pick up at that point where just the whole world is shit.
Mm.
And instead, kind of... Too. It kind of retells this movie, only in an apartment building, if memory serves.
Oh, so it's just demons,
it's like a
high again.
Rise.
Right. It's demons, comma, T-O-O.
Ah, gotcha.
I like it, though. I like the second one.
Yeah, no, both of these movies. And to be fair, when I first saw Demons when I was a kid, it legitimately gave me the creeps. I thought it was honestly a pretty scary film, but I was also, you know, 11. So
I think the makeup can be pretty frightening here. The effects, even though, you know, they're silly and goofy, you know, spurting and gooey and all of that, at the same time, they're kind of horrifying. You know, when you get the second hooker, when she has the claw marker on her neck,
mm-hmm.
And it's like five long gashes on her neck. I think that looks pretty horrific. And then you get that little bubble that bursts the green goo. And, you know, it gets a legitimate ugh from me. You know, I mean, there are several things in this movie where I'm just like, ugh, because it's hard to look at.
Yeah, and the sounds that they make when they're kind of undergoing the transformation are kind of half pitiful and half scary.
Hmm.
which I like that combination of feeling like there's still an element of humanity in them for a moment where they're resisting this. And this movie doesn't go far enough, I think, in describing the mythology of what's going on or makes any effort at all to try to tell a story about that. But at the same time, I'm kind of okay with the randomness of it. And, you know, in that way, it reminds me a bit of The Mist, where it's just like, hey, here's some shit that goes wrong and we don't really know why.
Right.
And so I'm okay with that as a tool there. I wish I knew more about what was happening, partially because, you know, that's narratively satisfying. And also because I'm kind of genuinely engaged with what's going on the screen.
Right, right. All right. So grades?
Yeah. How do you grade this thing?
Yeah.
I give this a B.
All right.
I do. I agree. It's just for everything that it lacks, I think it makes up for in wonderful Italian goo and head chopping and fucking metal.
Yeah, all those reasons, as well as some pretty bold choices in terms of the ending of this movie. It could have just been, hey, here's a massacre in the theater and things worked out.
Right.
And the fact that it ends with the apocalypse, I respect. So, yeah, this is a solid B for me as well.
All right. Yeah, I give it a B. I mean, it's just so silly, but, you know, that's kind of, you kind of have to know what you're getting into when you go watch a lot of these Italian movies from the 70s and 80s, because they do tend to be all kind of goofy nuts like this. More so in the 80s, where they're just like, ah, fuck it. Throw some blood on it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. So, that is it for Demons. Next week is Behind the Mask. And we'll be right back to close out the show.
Hey, Iris, you know what we should do? We should try to get Fred Olin Ray on the show.
Why would he want to come on our show?
Hi, this is Fred Olin Ray, and you're listening to the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Count podcast.
Okay, what about Olaf Ittenbach, Germany's splatter king?
That'd be great, but I doubt he speaks any English.
I'm Olaf Ittenbach, and you're listening to the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Count podcast.
What about the director of Blood Sucking Freaks, Joel M. Reed?
Isn't he dead?
This is Joel M. Reed, and you're listening to Badass Boobs and Body Counts podcast.
No, Iris, he's not. Hello, I'm Mike, host to the Badass Boobs and Body Counts podcast.
And I'm Iris, co-host of the Badass Boobs and Body Counts podcast.
Every week, and I, Iris, discuss lesser-known action, exploitation, and horror cult cinema.
Mike and I discuss films like The Black Godfather, The Beast That Killed Women, and Biozombie, to name just a few.
And every now and then, we get to speak with the people behind all the films we love to talk about.
Okay, how about this, Mike? Let's get Andy Sidaris on the show and talk girls, guns, and G-strings.
Iris, he's actually really dead, but we did manage to talk to his wife, Arlene, way back in episode 20.
Well, I suppose that's the next best thing.
Yeah, I suppose so. So the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts podcast can be found on iTunes, on Stitcher Smart Radio, and on SoundCloud. Just search for the BB&BC podcast to start listening today. You can also visit the show's website at badassesboobsandbodycounts.com. Okay, Iris, did you keep track of the boob and body counts on the film we're discussing next week?
No, I thought you were doing that this week.
I've seen this, boy.
No, it was you. It was you.
Look, from now on, let's both do that.
Okay, that sounds good.
So, thank you everyone for listening to Divided Podcast episode 79. Next week is Listener's Choice, which is obviously Behind the Mask. That was the one that won the poll.
Excellent. Excellent choice, listeners.
Yes.
That's what happens when your poll depends on the curiosity of a hooker.
More movies should hinge on that as a dramatic element. Like in Big, if, you know, Josh didn't have the mystery box or whatever, the Zoltan machine, and it just hinged on a hooker giving him a magic card or something. And if she had taken a fiver to give a blow to somebody in an alley, the movie just never would have happened and the kid would have stayed his age forever. I think every movie should incorporate that.
Jesus Christ.
I can think of at least a handful that would be improved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Any Michael Bay film?
I'm going to gonna, dear Michael Bay, more hookers. That's all I'm saying.
Now that I've thought about that, I don't think we need to encourage Michael Bay to include more hookers.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to encourage Michael Bay to make any movies, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all fair.
Yeah.
The Muppet movie with a hooker. Like, instead of Dom DeLuise in the rowboat, it was a hooker who just kind of paddles up to Kermit and is like, you know, sucky, sucky, $5. And he's like, no, I want to go to Hollywood. Oh, Hollywood.
What's your dream?
Do you want me to give it a tug while you're telling me your dream? No? Okay. I don't know where Muppet genitalia lies, but, you know, two hands, 10 fingers. What do I need to do?
Muppets only have like 3 fingers, too. Just saying.
Yeah, but the hooker's got 10.
Oh, my God.
The Muppet's the conductor. The hooker's just on the train.
Oh, my God.
Or is the train on the hooker?
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you want me to put this? In your... All the way up? All right. And make your mouth move?
I was just about to say you can make the mouth flap.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Good Lord.
Look out for Dr. Now, Teeth.
And now I want to see the shitty stand-up comic who once upon a time did Beaker having an orgasm.
Yeah.
Because I know it's out there.
Oh, I thought you were thinking of someone specific. I'm trying to figure out who that would be, but...
No, you know that somebody's had to have done the, you know... Meep, 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 meep.
Oh, Lord. Anyway.
Was Janice a hooker?
That, no, I mean, she was a bassist.
She was in the Electric Mayhem, but it looked like maybe... She knew her way around a little Muppet cock.
Oh, my God. Can't believe
for we're sure
talking about this.
I bet she was kind of Dr. T's bitch. Come on over here, Janice.
Got the tongue.
Right. We go from talking about Shakespeare last week to Muppets fucking this week.
Well, yeah, that's the natural progression.
It's all literature.
God damn it.
And to be fair, we did mention Bram Stoker earlier in the episode.
Right, because his book was loosely based on a movie, used for the basis of a movie. Very loosely.
Lord, I hope loosely. I have not read it, but now I should, just to see.
What
Ken Russell
right. If it's like, you know, Jonathan Harker's other journals. I came up across an ivory dildo. It served as a mantle. It adorned a mantle. That's how it would get.
Yes. Anyway.
Keanu Reeves would play the character.
Oh, God. All right. I'm wrapping this shit up.
He's good with a mouth harp. God damn it. Sorry, I am done. I'm done.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back for episode 80. With Behind the Mask and Kill List. And I don't know when our best and worst episode is going to be. Probably like 81, I think, depending on.
Yeah.
I don't know. It may be at the end of the year. It may be at the beginning of next year. Who knows? Who gives a shit? You'll get it when we get it.
Wait. I got one more.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Dr. Teeth, speaking to Janice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a direct line from the Muppet movie with one word changed. Golden teeth and golden showers. Welcome to my presence. Because he pees on her.
Ways that you could make the Muppet movie better.
Yeah.
Even better, I shall say.
Hard to believe it's possible, but yes.
All right. Say goodnight, folks.
Goodnight, folks.
Fucking smartasses. Bye, everybody.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteD
DAVE@gmail.com or maven1974@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at ddelamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.
I guess everyone's entitled to a fun good scare.
Don't just blame the movies. The movies. Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos. The poor creator. Yes, yes, yes.
I remember when they walked down the hall in the state at night and the people start to disappear.
Sometimes.
Devour the podcast.